Well, it seems like all of Cincinnati is singing, what with the May Festival and the World Choir Games, and the timely release of a new book, A City That Sings, Cincinnati's Choral Tradition, 1800 to 2012. And joining me in the studio are two of the authors of the book, Frank Pendle and Karen Pendle. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Now, this is a very gorgeous book, I must say, filled with all sorts of history and anecdotal representation and photography and artwork, obviously a labor of love. And Frank, you were the author of the first chapter.
That's right.
And that's Becoming the Queen City, an overview, sort of a historical retrospective of how Cincinnati came into being such a strong choral city.
Yes. I had considered from time to time using the history of Cincinnati in 12 pages, which rather, I hope, will outline the problem. There's too much information. And obvious sources, Dan Hurley's Cincinnati, the Queen City, and the older centennial histories. But I decided that I should best concentrate on two topics, the economic development and then the social history. The economic development is typical of a frontier community. The first actual economic relations were nothing much more than swapping a day's labor for two handfuls of corn seed. But then as small surpluses were gathered, they could be turned into barrels of cornmeal, flour, and salt pork. Manufacturing started, and by the mid-century, there was a surprising assortment well beyond the meat packing and construction of steamboats that many people consider familiar. Of course, the first settlers were American-born people of English heritage, and later the German influence came in. Both had not only self-entertainment, gather around the piano and sing, or listen and sing and bang your beer mug on the table in a beer hall, but also there was a wider exposure to what we would call the higher culture. The first people probably were the touring fiddle players, and then you have plays on opera touring companies. The piano reduction, like four-hand Haydn or Mozart symphonies, seemed to be the LP of the 19th century to expose people. Then when the Industrial Exposition wanted entertainment, they would invite the German Sängverein, and when they combined under Theodor Thomas, they were quite willing and able to do some very good music, and traditions grow and survive. And one last thing, I should mention that Cincinnati has always had civic-minded people who supported public projects. From Martin Baum and Jacob Burnett, Daniel Drake, Reuben Springer, De Schmidlap, Mary Emery, Louise Nippert, the Corbetts, and now the Rosenthals. How many cities can you name that have a free admission in their major art galleries? I think Cincinnati is truly blessed in the heritage and in the leadership that it has had.
And I should mention that in addition to the support of the arts, Cincinnati is a city that really engages in learning the arts and becoming proficient at them, either for their own entertainment or to become professional. And that brings us to your chapter, Karen, and that is the second chapter, Queen City of Song, Choral Music in Cincinnati Schools, Conservatories, and Universities.
When we came here in 1976, and among the other things we did, we joined the May Festival Chorus. I was wondering how a city supports the kind of chorus that can do this kind of repertoire, the size of the chorus, and as I found out when I sang in my first May Festival, the following of this chorus. Our public loved us. When I started working on this chapter, I found out why. And the reason is that from the mid-19th century, the fundamental reason that the city could support all of the choral music that was there was the fact that they had choral music, vocal music taught in the public schools, also in the Roman Catholic schools. And when the independent colored school system came along in the mid-19th century, all of these schools included music in their curriculum practically from the beginning. They didn't just sing nice little songs. They learned how to read music. And it was the aim of the first people who brought music to the public schools and the Catholic and the independent colored schools, it was their aim to get a bunch of people who could sight read music intelligently. For a long time, the public schools only supported up to grades 1 through 8, but right away, the schools were providing choirs for visiting firemen who were holding a convention in some downtown hotel, or when they were trying to raise funds for the Cincinnati Public Library System, there were school choirs that gave concerts so that they would raise some funds for this project. When the May Festival started, school choirs were sometimes amassed to sing with the May Festival chorus or with the orchestra or sometimes concerts on their own. So the whole system of choral music in this city stems from the fact that there was music in the schools. And it was only when one of our school levies failed, which would have been the early 60s, that music started to drift away from the schools. And the answer to the problem of what do we do now was the Cincinnati Boy Choir, first of all, which was formed in 1965 and was an all-city choir that became a system of music education as well. And a little bit later, the Cincinnati Children's Choir, which is now an ensemble in residence at CCM, that too is a system of music education. They don't just sing. They don't just learn their tunes. They have music education. They learn about music. The upper echelon of music education in this city, well, 1867 was the year that Clara Bower got a little space in one of the downtown girls' school to start what she wanted to make into a conservatory in the style of the European conservatories that she had known when she was younger. The College of Music was born about the same time as Music Hall, 1878, and they took over the what we call Corbett Tower now. That was their first headquarters, built a few buildings in addition to that. The conservatory and the college were independent until 1955, and then they merged and moved up to what had become the conservatory's main campus up in Mount Auburn. These buildings no longer exist. And finally, in 62, the merged College and Conservatory of Music came into the University of Cincinnati and moved up on campus in 67, finally with their brand new building. The University of Cincinnati had an agreement with both the college and the conservatory to turn out music teachers for the public schools. So students from the college and the conservatory would come up to the main campus. This started in the 1920s. And they'd take their education courses and their practice teaching and such things and be qualified to teach in schools. But the University of Cincinnati also had its own music program. In the 1920s, the glee clubs were formed. There was a male glee club, which could be pretty large. There was a women's glee club. That could be fairly large, too. And they were very active. They sang with the CSO. They toured various places, sometimes gave concerts by themselves, sometimes as a joint group. In addition, there was a chorus over at the School of Nursing, an independent chorus. And there was a group formed in 1930 called the University Singers, which was unique in that it was a group for the African-American students who did not sing in the men's glee club or the Women's Glee Club at that time. Now, finally, they had their own. First, it was a women's group, then some men were added. And eventually, the name University Singers was taken over by a CCM group that was very popular, that did show tunes, and was a great, great group. And there again, you've got a source for church choirs, for the May Festival chorus, for any number of things that were going on in the city, including the folks who just gathered at the beer halls in the evening and sang old German songs.
There's going to be a gathering at the library coming up, and that's for the release of your book.
This is going to take place on the 20th of May in the afternoon. That's a Sunday, in the main library downtown in the atrium reading garden, unless it rains, of course, then we'll go inside. And there is going to be not only a revelation of the book, but there was also going to be a panel to discuss the book. Kathy Roma is going to bring a couple of her choral groups there to do some music for us. And while we four sit around a table and sign books, the musicians will give us a taste of some of the choral music that exists in this city. I think it's going to be nice. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, May 20th.
Well, I'd like to thank this evening's guest, Frank and Karen Pendle. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I'd like to remind listeners that we'll be interviewing the two authors of the second half of the book in a future episode. But for more information on A City That Sings, Cincinnati's Choral Tradition, 1800 to 2012, please be sure to visit our website at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Jim Stump.